Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I'm George Taylor with you for this one, podcast number 24. And we'll continue sailing through our 41 books in 41 days. It's a brief look at all the audiobooks I've recorded and produced over the past year or so. And again, I want to start by inviting you to join the Helping Hands Press authors and readers for what we call a Thirsty Thursday party. It's a live radio call-in show broadcast on blogtalkradio.com. The link will be on my website. More on that in a minute. If you don't want to call in, you can listen and then participate in the Helping Hands Press Facebook site. There are contests, chances to weigh in with your opinion on books, reviews on new releases, and a whole lot more. You might even hear from an author or two about their own work. So join us for this interesting time. It starts live at 8 p.m. Eastern this Thursday, August 20th. If you can't listen live, then the broadcast is archived for you to listen to later. Same link for the live broadcast and the archive broadcast. So all the links we talk about on this broadcast are put on my website. That's narrationbygeorge.com. Click on the podcast link for all the links mentioned in today's podcast. So our first book today is a sweet romance by an author we've previously talked about on this podcast, Regina Puckett. Songs That I Whisper is a follow-up, I really wouldn't call it a sequel, to Concealed in My Heart, which we featured in podcast number 20. In this story, we meet the children of the protagonists of Concealed. Suzette Warren is a beautiful artist commissioned to paint the portrait of country music's up-and-coming star, Seth Black. Take a listen.
So, you're Suzette Warren. I'm so happy to meet you at last. Her bold self-confidence gripped Suzette. I see you didn't have any trouble finding Seth's studio, but then I didn't think you would. Not giving Suzette time to comment, Beverly jumped right into their planned meeting. Seth will be here shortly. The group's in the studio putting the finishing touches on a new song. They're having a disagreement about the musical arrangements. She waved her hand in the air as if swatting away a pesky fly. It's nothing new. Seth's very stubborn when it's a song to which he's written the lyrics. He has this thing in his head. Only he knows how he wants it to go, but then the band members begin voicing their own opinions. Before we know it, we have a small war being played out in the studio. Beverly smiled as if it was nothing new, nothing that couldn't easily be sorted through. Suzette cleared her throat before speaking.
After listening to his songs, I wondered if he wrote his own lyrics, and if they were maybe about his childhood.
Beverly looked over at an open doorway before answering. Yes, they are, but fortunately I think Seth blocked a great deal of it from his memory.
She sighed and quickly glanced at the doorway again. This time she lowered her voice.
When his father died, Seth inherited this building. It's probably the only good thing Montgomery Black ever did.
Beverly scanned her office as if expecting the dead man to materialize out of thin air. Suzette was stunned. She had no idea Montgomery Black was Seth's father. The man was a legend in the music industry.
I don't know why I never connected Seth with Mr. Black before, but it makes perfect sense now that I think about it. I probably should have seen the resemblance. While I've never followed country music, even I've heard of Montgomery Black.
The chair creaked loudly as Beverly leaned backwards. She made a temple with her long fingers and appeared to weigh her words carefully.
I guess you were too young to remember how Montgomery died?
Suzette shrugged.
I know he died, but that's about all I know.
Beverly leaned forward, but instead of looking at Suzette, she wiped a non-existent speck of dust from her desk.
Montgomery died of a drug overdose in this recording studio, and Seth was the first one to discover his body.
That image must haunt him still.
This time Beverly made a point of making eye contact. His death traumatized Seth. Montgomery was always a selfish son of a bitch. Thankfully, the only thing Seth inherited was his musical talent. He saw way too much to ever want to follow in his father's footsteps, but I'm afraid it has also made him very wary of being involved with people. Please don't be offended if Seth is a little standoffish at first, because once he learns to trust you, he's a friend without equal.
That last statement hung in the air, and they were both lost in their own thoughts when Seth came bursting into the room.
"I'm sorry I'm late."
He flashed a dazzling smile at Suzette. Seeing him again made her heart beat a little faster, and she thought he looked great in his faded jeans and white T-shirt. Seth plopped down in the chair next to hers.
"My plans were to be here waiting for you when you arrived, but there was an important matter to be taken care of in the studio."
Plagued by butterflies in her stomach, Suzette nervously replied,
"I arrived a little earlier than expected, and Beverly said you were having a problem in the studio. I hope you were able to straighten everything out."
With the briefest of look at Beverly and a slight edge of steel to his voice, he answered, "It's never straightened out. Disagreeing is what we do best. I'm going to do this song my way, or we aren't putting it in the new album." It was easy to believe Seth could be hard-headed if need be. The personal messages in his lyrics had to mean everything to him, much more than it would to the other band members. By then, Seth and Suzette were smiling at each other until Beverly cleared her throat, leaned forward, and folded her hands on the desktop.
"Seth has a great idea."
Even though she didn't look over at him, Suzette sensed he'd tensed.
"You're clearly a busy woman, Suzette, but if you thought you could find the time, next week the group's leaving to go on tour, and Seth thought you might like to join them. You did say you needed to get to know the person before you could paint them. I can't think of a better way of doing that than living in the close confines of a tour bus for 2 weeks."
The unexpected invitation left Suzette speechless. Instead of looking at Beverly or Seth, she studied her hands. Living with several men on a tour bus for 2 weeks seemed like an extreme way of getting to know anyone. It could be loads of fun, or a terrible mistake.
Regina's book, Songs That I Whisper, has been called a wonderful story with real human characters. This book is available at audible.com. If you're not an Audible subscriber, you can get your first book free for trying out the service. So why not Songs That I Whisper? Check out more on my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com/books. Scroll a little over halfway down for the Romance and Life category. Click on the book icon for more info. Our next book fits the Romance and Life category as well. It's called Sunrise, and that's S-O-N, In Sweetland, by Anne Baxter Campbell. It's the story of the short engagement between Will and Carrie. You see, Will can't keep his foot out of his mouth. However, God's plans for this couple will not be deterred. With the Easter theme prevalent in this story, watch how God works in the lives of these characters to bring them together.
Old memories walked along beside her. The graduation wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for Bill and Arlene Smith, Will and Shelley's parents. When Carly had been a sophomore, her mother had gone to jail for dealing drugs after years of going in and out of rehab. Carly's father had disappeared 10 years before. A great uncle had been appointed as her guardian, but he didn't seem to notice when she didn't eat or wandered the streets of Sweetland all night. Bill had found her sleeping in his shop one morning and had called Arlene to come get her. Together, the two of them wormed out the truth she'd been hiding from everybody, even Shelley. She went to school most days without having had breakfast and without a lunch. The washer had quit working long before, and with no money for laundry, she washed her clothes by hand. Not many of them fit anymore. She had been growing up and out. That had been the beginning.
Although she continued technically under her guardian's care, she spent more time at the Smith household than she did with him. It had been the Smiths who had assured she ate properly and had clothes that fit, including a formal for the senior prom. Will's parents felt more like her mom and dad than her own did. Another reason she had to get this ugly business with Will finished. If they split forever, she wanted to maintain her friendship with the family. But would she ever be able to look at Will and not feel her heart tear in two, especially if he found someone else and married her? Tears rolled down her cheeks as they walked silently from one stop to the next. Her thoughts turned to her Lord and his suffering on that day of days. Such love was beyond her understanding. Nothing she could do for him would be equal to what he did for her and the whole world. She would do anything for Jesus. Anything. They made another stop. She lifted one of her hands to praise God as they sang, "I Surrender All."
"Will you surrender your rights to me?"
"My rights? What rights?" The vision of herself with arms folded across her chest, her back to the phone, and an angry expression on her face flooded her mind. "Oh, there is that. Okay, Lord. I give my right to be angry to you. And unforgiving. And a little stubborn." She grinned to herself. "Okay. A lot stubborn." She couldn't call Will right now, but when she got home from work, that would be her first priority, unless she wimped out. "Lord, this could take more courage than surrender."
Will stared at the cell phone in his hand, willing it to ring. "How long, Lord?" "Oh, yeah, she'd be at the crosswalk right now, and then at work. But afterwards, would she call then? He had asked in Jesus' name." "Amiss." Will jumped. What was that? One of his students messing with him? That had to be it. He strode to the door and looked up and down the hall. They were probably in the restroom, giggling like girls over the teacher's jump and startled expression. Amiss. Amiss. He pulled a dictionary from the books lining the wall. In a mistaken or faulty way. A mental picture of himself surfaced. He stood before Jesus demanding what he wanted. Is that what he looked like to God? So was the word amiss used in the Bible? He wished the day were over so he could look it up. He glanced at the clock. 3.5 hours. He pulled his PB&J sandwich from the desk drawer and munched, his gaze unfocused. Sunrise in Sweetland is available from Helping Hands Press. Go to narrationbygeorge.com/books, scroll about halfway down for the romance and life category, then click on the book icon for more information. Staying in the romance and life category again, we move next to Summer in Sweetland by Kathy Messias, Ann Baxter Campbell, and Sue Badeau. And yes, this story is set in the same fictional town of Sweetland. This time we meet Homer and Celia Evers, parents to 6 adoptive children. One of their boys is in juvie, accused of 2 crimes, and there's a group home with more children looking for their forever families. The Evers have a desire to help them in some way, particularly for those kids who might be considered too old for adoption. How?
"Dad says you want to talk."
Celia was too impatient to wait for Jackie to begin, so she jumped in while she filled the sink with soapy water.
"Yeah, it's about my friend Wendy. You know, the girl on the track team? The one who's really good at hurdles?"
Jackie had a way of making nearly everything that came out of her mouth sound like a question.
"Sure, I remember her. She's really something on those hurdles. Well..."
Jackie was clearly struggling to find words, so she finished drying 3 plates before continuing. Then the words tumbled out in a torrent.
"Mom, you know how you're a social worker? Well, you gotta help, please. Wendy is super smart, and you know, she wants to go to college, right? But she told me today she's flunking English and gym. Gym, she's a track star, right? Mom, how could she flunk gym? She told me she's flunking on purpose. You know, it doesn't make any sense. When Jackie paused for air, Celia asked, You're right, Jackie. It doesn't sound very sensible. Did she say why she's flunking those classes? And what makes you think she needs social work help? Well, the thing is, Mom, she lives at that group home, the one out by the cemetery. She hates it there, Mom. I mean, she tells everyone it's cool, but, you know, I guess because I'm adopted, she, like, tells me how she really feels, you know? Oh, I see. Now it's beginning to make sense. I imagine she's scared about what will happen to her once she graduates. She'll have to leave the group home, and if she doesn't have a family, she's probably worried she won't have any place to go. So if she flunks a couple of classes, she can stay in high school in the group home one more year before facing an uncertain future. Does that sound about right? Yeah, Mom. See, I knew you'd understand. Can you talk to her? Jackie surprised Celia with a rare hug. Maybe we could invite her over for dinner? I can't be her social worker, Jaxter. I'm sure she already has one. But we can get to know her a little better, and we can help her form some connections in the community, so facing her graduation won't seem so scary.
Here we are, Homer said, turning around to Wendy in the back seat.
Thanks so much for dinner, and I really appreciate the ride home, Mr. and Mrs. Evers. Do you mind coming in for a minute to meet Roger, the night staff person? I need an adult to sign me in when I'm out after 8 o'clock.
Wendy Jurgens shyly glanced from Homer to Celia. Sure, we can come in for a few minutes, Wendy. It was lovely to have you for dinner. I hope you can come again. I'm glad you and Jackie became friends. You have so much in common. The adult strode toward the side door of the group home as Jackie and Wendy dawdled behind them, clearly not wanting the evening to end. No sooner were they inside than one of the other girls bolted up to Wendy.
Can your friend stay long enough for a couple of games of ping-pong? Chira isn't here, so we need someone to take her place to play doubles.
Homer nodded when Jackie raised a questioning eyebrow at him. She shed her spring jacket and accepted the proffered ping-pong paddle.
I'm Veronica, the tall, gangly girl said. Who are you?
Jackie Evers. I run track with Wendy.
While the girls played, Homer and Celia perched on the edge of the worn sofa, listening to the conversation. When Veronica mentioned she loved animals, Homer said, Do you have an after-school job, Veronica? I know they're looking to hire someone at the Beaks and Fins pet shop. The owner comes in to Deanie's every day for breakfast, complaining that he can't find good help for the afternoon hours.
That would be a dream job, Mr. Evers, being with animals every day. I'd have to clear it with the staff here and my caseworker and figure out transportation.
Her face beamed.
Do you think your friend would really hire a group home girl?
Summer in Sweetland was the number one book in Amazon's hot new release category for adoption. Find out more on my website. It's narrationbygeorge.com/books. Scroll about halfway down for the romance and life category to find this book icon. Click there for more information. While we're in the town of Sweetland, let's take a look next at the final book I've produced that is set in Sweetland. Sweetwater River by Peggy Bland Pfeiffer takes some of the children from summer in Sweetland and places them in the home of Mike and Rosine Carson. They have a new marriage and 4 adoptive teenage daughters. And in this story, Rosine sheds some burdens which will come to threaten Mike, and the daughters are enjoying life in college. The family took their seats at the round antique pedestal table and bowed their heads as Mike thanked the Lord for their blended family and asked God's blessing over the meal. As they ate, the kitchen rang with laughter and playful teasing, Mike giving back as good as he got. Rosine wanted to gather them all into her arms in a big, grateful hug.
Thank you, Lord, for this wonderful man you gifted me with, and for this family you've entrusted to our care.
I have a surprise for you all, Shira said.
What? As if your new haircut wasn't surprise enough, Misty challenged. Well, there is that, but there's more to tell. So spit it out, big sister. What's this new surprise? It must be something exciting. I can tell by the look on your face, Melanie demanded. Remember my solo Easter Sunday morning? Who could possibly forget it? Mike spoke up. It gave me goosebumps. Me too, Veronica said. It was awesome. Well, Professor Howlett, my music teacher at the university, somehow found out I was singing that day and snuck into town from New Beckton to hear me. I never knew he'd been there until this past Monday. That was rather sneaky of him. I thought so too, Mom, until he explained that he wanted to see how I performed solo in front of a large audience. He said that by keeping his presence hidden, I'd be more relaxed. He thought my knowing he was there might make me nervous. Would it? Rosine asked. Yeah, big time. Of course, I've sung in front of him during my voice lessons, but that's one-on-one, a lot different than singing alone before a crowd.
Okay, daughter, don't keep us in suspenders, Mike quipped with a chuckle, getting the usual groans and rolling eyeballs. Finish your tale about the professor.
Well, after chorale on Monday, Prof asked me to stay after the others left. He told me what he had done on Easter Sunday and asked if I was interested in doing solo work outside of chorale. I told him I'd never really considered it and that Easter was the first time I'd ever soloed in public.
Rosine bit back a gasp as Mike speared another baked potato, slit it open, and slathered it with butter, a generous scoop of sour cream, followed by a sprinkling of chopped chives. She cleared her throat.
Ahem?
He ignored her and focused his attention on their number two daughter. Now that's intriguing. What's he getting at?
That's the exciting part, Dad. It seems Professor H is a member of an area organization that brings in and schedules shows for the various theaters in and around the Branson area.
Melanie squealed.
Really?
The excited response rippled around the table.
I know, Shira beamed. Rosine
corralled the last bit of coleslaw on her plate and shoved it against a piece of bread to finish it off.
I can't wait to hear the rest of this. What happened next?
You've heard of the Gaither Homecoming shows, right?
Of course, I love their shows. Such great gospel music, Mike said. And then his eyes widened. Are you telling me? Shira laughed.
Relax, Dad. Don't have a heart attack. No, not them, though that would be awesome. His group is working on something similar, that's all.
So what's the deal then?
Rosine wanted to know.
The deal is, are you ready for this? Professor Howlett wants me, Shira said, poking her chest with a finger, to be part of his new show they're putting together. Can you believe it?
Are you kidding me?
Veronica shrinked.
Would I kid about something like this?
Sweetwater River is a wonderful tale of the way that adoptive parents are blessed by their adoptive kids. Check it out on my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. Scroll about halfway down for the Romance Life section and click on the icon for the book. Our last book today takes us to the Christmas story, but it does it in an unusual way. In The Swaddling Clothes by Amber Shamel, we go back to the time of King David. For the birth of his son Solomon, he orders the weaving of special swaddling cloth. In the midst of all this, there is the kingdom intrigue between the other sons and their mothers, attempting to ensure that their son will be named as David's successor. All of this story is based on the history we read in the Old Testament about the rule of King David. Now, how does this connect to the Christmas story? Well, that's the surprise for the end of the book. You'll have to listen to find out. Check out this sample.
Absalom slipped out the door into the courtyard. He tried to keep a nonchalant pace as he approached the long line of weavers waiting for their turn to appear before the king and queen. Judging by their restless manner and irritated looks, the craftsmen were growing impatient. He pasted on his charmer's smile and addressed one of them.
"Shalom, friend. Have you been waiting long?"
The man glanced in his direction and kept looking towards the door. 3 days!
That long? What a shame. Surely my father appreciates the business you are losing by being here instead of in your shop. The man grunted as he stretched his neck, trying to see past the crowds. The door to the hall opened and Ahithophel appeared. He stood on a block beside a statue of a lion and cupped his hands over his mouth.
The king has determined that the craftsman must be of the tribe of Judah. If you are of that tribe, please stay. The rest of you are dismissed. Thank you for your dedication to your king and country.
Murmurs rose like a cresting wave. Perfect. Absalom raised his voice so that he would be heard above the grumbling crowd.
This is outrageous, to keep so many people here this long and then dismiss them without a chance. I will have to speak to my father about this. It just isn't right. Please accept my apologies for his behavior. The king will be hearing from his advisers.
Who are you to challenge the king?
A short, plump man stared up at him through beady eyes.
My dear man, I am not challenging the king. I am Absalom, his son and royal adviser. I do not wish to challenge my father, only to help him.
A tall man with a beard spoke up.
What would you say to those that think the king was foolish to make all his sons advisers when they're all less than 20 years of age?
Absalom let out a sarcastic gasp.
How dare you speak out against the king?
He chuckled, as did those around him. This was going better than he could have planned.
Now, we all know that my father has a heart of gold. However, he does dote upon his children, perhaps to a fault.
He clasped his hands in front of him.
Take this swaddling clothes notion, for example. Such a heartwarming idea, don't you think? To make a special cloth to wrap the child in. But is this really what is best for the kingdom? Think how much this will cost. Is it really fair to make the kingdom pay for his paternal whim?
The faces of the crowd betrayed the wheels turning inside their heads.
If I were king, I would never make the nation pay for such things. Such whims would be paid for out of the spoils I earned in battle.
The man with beady eyes spoke again.
King David has won us many battles. He has expanded the kingdom of Israel over 100 miles to the north and to the south. His spoils have earned him a few whims. David has been the salvation of Israel.
Yes, my father has conquered many nations. But who is conquering now? The armies of Israel are encamped against Rabbah Ammon as we speak. But where is our king? Spending the entire treasury on baby clothes. It is time someone speaks the voice of reason to him.
The tall man rubbed his beard.
Then perhaps you are the man to do it, Absalom. In the meantime, I am going home.
The line in the courtyard diminished until only a few remained near the door. The short man looked up at Absalom, his beady eyes boring into him.
I warn you, Prince Absalom, such speeches could be interpreted as rebellion. The king would not be pleased to hear of conspiracy in his own house.
He stepped closer and lowered his voice.
If I were you, I'd watch your back.
The man brushed past him and disappeared.
The Swaddling Clothes by Amber Shamel is available from Helping Hands Press. Check my website for more information. Narration by George.com/books. Scroll down to the Holiday Books section. Click on the book icon for more information. Well, that closes the podcast for this week. Next week, we'll finish up the 41 books in 41 days with some poetry, fantasy, science fiction, and a Western novel. Well, could it get any more varied? I doubt it. Don't forget, you can like me on Facebook. It's Narration by George. Or follow me on Twitter. I'm at Narration by Geo. Join me again next Wednesday when this podcast, the Narration by George podcast, will again be new. God bless.